Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to episode number 10 of the Everything Coworking Podcast. Today, our guest is Dana Horst. At the time of the interview, Dana was a member at Design Cloud, a coworking space in Chicago. Design Cloud closed its doors at the end of 2014, but Dana shares her story about the impact that being a member of Design Cloud had on her life. She also shares some advice she has for anyone starting a new business. Dana is the development director of the fundraising collective Creative Partners. Have a listen, and we share some of the resources from the podcast in the show notes, which you can find at www.everythingcoworking.com/10. Dana, thank you so much for taking time to share your story with us today and help us to get to know you. Tell us about yourself, anything you want to share, where you grew up, a little bit about your career background, anything unique and personal to help us get to know you.
I come from the entire Midwest. If you pointed a place on a map of the Midwest, I have probably lived there. I started off in the nonprofit world and in the arts world at the same time in 2001, as far as the administrative side. I had grown up and was a very arts kid and went to college with the expectation that I was going to study theater and I was going to be an actor, and that's what I was going to do. And in 2001, I just talked my way into a job I was not qualified for. Started working at this great theater in Minneapolis where I went to school. It's called the Southern Theater, and they're a presenting theater, and they focused on contemporary dance and contemporary chamber music and experimental theater. And I talked my way into a job there, and I just stayed. I was still acting at the time, and after a couple of years, I realized that in these like really tedious double shift days I was doing at the Southern Theater, when I was like deduplicating database records and just all this like tedious administrative like database work and, you know, trying to read old receipts and all that jazz, I was having so much more fun doing that than I ever was going to rehearsal.
Huh.
And I was like, if I don't like performing as much as I like cleaning this database and like doing that for the arts, why bother? It's so hard.
Yeah.
So that sent me on to grad school because I realized I wanted to do more with arts administration. And I applied to a bunch of programs around the country, and I ended up going to the University of Cincinnati through their College Conservatory of Music, which is a great music conservatory. They have an arts administration program, and they have a dual degree with their business school. So I went to get my MA and my MBA at the same time.
Wow.
It was financially, it was worth it, and you know, always, but financially extra worth it because you're only going to school for 2 years and you're only paying for one degree.
Yep.
And you end up with two master's degrees.
As long as you don't make yourself crazy in the meantime.
There's that, yeah. You would be in class from like 10 a.m. till 9:30 p.m. 4 days a week. But then you had Fridays off, so you felt like you were getting away with something, even though you just worked, four 12-hour days in a row. It was really great. It was a super great experience, and I loved grad school. And part of what that also entailed was they very much wanted you to have practical work experience. Most of us came from the arts administration world, the nonprofit world already. But while you were in school, they said, well, you also have to, you know, work, intern, do this and that. So after your first year, you are to leave town and find an internship and figure out how you're going to pay to live while interning because you have no money.
Right.
And I came to Chicago. I didn't really know that many people in Chicago, but I sent out resumes to a bunch of places and ended up getting hired as a summer intern with Red Moon Theater here in Chicago. At the end, I went in as a general management intern, and pretty quickly, the development director there sort of grabbed me and was like, you can write. You're going to be mine now. You're going to come to the fun fundraising side and help me. So I did that for a summer, went back to Cincinnati, finished grad school, really deeply missed Mexican food while I was in Cincinnati. There is no good Mexican. Yeah, so I would come up to Chicago at every opportunity for job interviews and da-da-da, and every time I would just, like, go nuts on tacos while I was here. So I graduated in 2009, and it was probably the worst time to go looking for a job ever.
Potentially. Probably to date, yes.
Yeah, yeah. The friends that graduated a year before I did, they all had jobs, like, right away.
Yeah.
And, there's us, my class of 09, sitting over there being like, what's a job? How do you get one?
Yeah. Well, especially in the creative field, right? I mean, jobs were hard to come by in any industry, but I would guess places where people were not spending their disposable income as usual had to be even worse.
It's been a massive hit. That whole set. I mean, it's taken so long to even recover. Start the recovery process took forever. So I didn't have a job, and it didn't look like I was going to get one. And so what I decided to do was just say, screw it, and move to Chicago anyway, live off the last of my student loans, and cross my fingers that eventually I would be employed. Eventually, 6 months later, I did get a job, but oh my god, that 6 months was rough.
Painful and scary, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It sounds like you knew from kind of an early age what your calling was. What was it about growing up that you knew you were going to be in this space?
I knew that the arts were it. I grew up in sort of the middle of nowhere, Nebraska, and there weren't a lot of arts there. There wasn't a theater. I mean, there wasn't even like a community. No, there was a community college, so you could split community college productions of shows.
Okay.
There was nowhere to go see music. There were no museums, you know, within 4 hours. And the only thing that was there for me was literature.
Okay.
So I became a very bookish kid and just always had my nose in a book. And once I had read all of the books in, you know, my second grade classroom or whatever, I was going to the library and I was just checking out plays. And so I was reading play scripts because I'd read all of the other books.
Interesting. So that just was kind of became your dream and your calling.
Yeah, that kind of became the thing. And then once I could finally go and see live theater, I mean, I was probably 15 when I saw, like, my first play. No, maybe a little earlier than that. But, you know, I was practically in high school before I'd seen any live performance on a stage.
Yep, but still, you knew that was it. Okay, yeah. So tell us, what are you doing today?
Okay, so what I'm doing today is I'm taking that arts background and I'm taking that suggestion from the person I interned for of, you can write, you're mine now. I'm doing fundraising for a collective of three arts organizations. So as a collective, we are called Creative Partners, and we are a fundraising collective that encompasses three disciplines. We have Blair Thomas & Company, work in puppet theater, and we have Lucky Plush Productions, who are a contemporary dance company, a very theatrical narrative contemporary dance company, and we have Eighth Blackbird, who is a small contemporary chamber music group. They focus exclusively on the music of living composers. So those three came together well before I knew that this was going to be what I was doing. They came together to do some research on what collaborative administrative practices would be most helpful to everyone. They went through a couple different iterations of the idea, and they landed on fundraising. Because all these great small and mid-sized companies, they've been established, they've been around for a while, and they all realized to grow they needed more contributed income, and for that they needed a development director. But they didn't have the money to hire a development director because they didn't have anyone raising the money. So it's this terrible, and you see it
chicken
all the time.
Egg, yeah.
It's this terrible catch-22.
Because there's like no pool of resources to get started. And yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't make that first leap because if you could make the first leap, you wouldn't need to.
Yeah.
So these companies decided that an interdisciplinary collaboration was very important. Just to sort of broaden the pool of people that are interested, rather than going after the same 300 people, say, if they're all fans of contemporary dance. So long story short, they did all this research, did all this legwork, went to the MacArthur Foundation, which is based here in Chicago, and who are the loveliest people in the world. So they gave us seed money. They gave us 3 years' worth of sort of startup funding to explore this and try this and experiment. And we had some other grants as well, some smaller grants, but MacArthur was really the lion's share. They really made this possible. So in fall of 2012? Yes. Fall of 2012, I started talking to these great people who run these organizations. It turns out that that whole background in contemporary dance and contemporary chamber music and theater, it turns out that was really useful. And
the fact that you could write.
And the fact that, it turns out I ended up being a fundraiser. So that, so I started in January of 2013, so we're about a year and a half in right now. It's incredibly challenging because there's no template to follow. There's nothing. It is sort of very startup-y in that way. There's definitely a lot of standard fundraising best practices, but as far as doing it for a collective, that's really interesting and unusual. And it's very cool.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, theaters in general are pretty entrepreneurial and bootstrappy, right? It's probably always
especially
kind of,
in Chicago. Yeah. Everybody's in their storefront theater.
Yeah, sort of right, working for a startup and trying to be creative and find ways to grow and to serve the community and do the work that you really want to do. So what's been your biggest challenge on this journey?
I think as far as the work we do as creative partners, since there is no template and there is nothing you can say, oh, we're the, you know, Chicago version of, it's communicating what we do and for whom. Mm. I can say last year we raised $500,000 for our partner organizations, but then people sometimes go, well, okay, you know, how does that get split up and whose is that and how do you have any money and blah. So communicating what we do and getting people familiar with the idea, just because there's no baseline familiarity that anyone has with the concept.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Mm-hmm. What's been your biggest success to date?
Honestly, I think it's when it's only starting to happen. But when I say, oh, I work for creative partners, and when somebody goes, oh, yeah, like they know.
Wow, yeah.
You've got the word out. You know the partner companies. You know this work. We're not just over here, you know, heads down on laptops. So when people know what it is we do, that's really gratifying and that's really fantastic.
Yep, and you realize that all the work you're doing to get the word out, it's finally starting to happen. I know those things take time, and I think it's so hard when you're trying to do something totally new and different to understand it can take a long time and to be patient and to not judge, you know, the work that you're doing until you give it a little bit of time to see the output. But it can take a long time to sort of see that fruit. Going back to sort of your overall unique path, if you were to meet someone who was maybe, say, your 15-year-old self, what advice would you give them about taking a journey on a more unique path like what you've done?
Just to know as much as you can about a broad variety of things. Because working across disciplines in the arts, that's very useful. But also super useful is the sort of basic nonprofit accounting, being able to write and all these things. And you can't just go in and say, I have this great, incredibly deep knowledge of theater. The most important thing for me was saying, well, I have this deep knowledge of theater, and also I know some things about dance, and I know some things about music, and I can structure your balance sheet. And
I was going to say, and you sort of have this, like, you had this hidden, like, inner geek that sort of came out, but allowed it to play in the art world, which is really
Absolutely.
Fun. You didn't sort of throw up your hands and say, I'm going to go be an accountant, you know, you found.
You know, sometimes that doesn't sound too terrible. Like, but yeah, and those are things that I never honestly thought, you know, like the accounting part, I never thought I would spend so much time staring at spreadsheets, but pretty quickly I went from that kid who was like, math, blah, I hate this, can I just read a book, to the person who likes creating those budgets and spreadsheets and running those numbers, because it's sort of, it's a second language a little bit, and when you can say, well, here are all our, you know, our qualitative successes, and let me tell you about that. But sometimes it's just way more compelling and communicative to say we raised $500,000 in our last fiscal year.
Speak the language that resonates best with your audience, because, yeah, you're balanced.
Working in the nonprofit world and working in the office especially, you have to be good at more than one thing, which is, I think, true whether you're a performer. When I was a performer, I was really good at taking a fall. Fight scenes were great. It was like, I can fall like nobody's
business.
That's
funny. That was your specialty.
But, you know, like, that wasn't enough. But working for a small nonprofit, working in the arts, you're always doing everything.
Yep, wearing multiple hats would be advice to your 15-year-old self.
Go learn everything. Go get a liberal arts degree and learn everything.
Throughout sort of the course of your career, what are two resources that you've found to be really helpful that you would like to share with others?
Personally, I'm lucky enough to have some friends that work in the field and some that, you know, some that work in arts administration, but in non-fundraising. I think being able to go to people that already do work that you want to do or work that's related to what you want to do is super invaluable, and especially when the people that will tell you all of the bad things. And they say, this is driving me nuts. This is something you will have to deal with.
Yeah.
Having that connection to people that you could in the future work with or want to work with, or yeah, getting that broad perspective is fantastic, which is such a general thing, because I can't be like, oh, get this book. Library.
It can be if there's a favorite book or a favorite, you know,
software
or something that you totally are in love with.
And I think another resource, honestly, grad school. You know, sometimes I would second guess, like, was it worth it to take 2 years off of working to go do this thing? But if somebody's really interested in the field and they want to get a very in-depth look at more than one facet, you can either go nuts by becoming a general manager of some tiny company where you have to do everything yourself and you have no guidance and sink or swim, which works for some people. Like, I know them and they're great. But going to grad school and getting a really broad look at the field and at all the facets of administration and, you know, spending the time and the money to do that, I think it was really valuable for me. I mean, there are programs that are great and there are programs that are terrible and, you know, buyer beware, but I was lucky and I think it really set me up for a lot of success. So I am totally a proponent of, you know, not dropping out of undergrad your sophomore year. go to grad school. Grad school's pretty great. It's very useful.
You know, I think there's so much that can be improved in our education system, but I think the big challenge in the system is for those who aren't clear on what they want.
Yes.
Because then you're spending a lot of money and you hear the stats of the 50% of today's graduates that have no jobs because the job market is still so tough, but they have their student loans. But for someone who, you know, is already on the path and totally, you know, gets what they want to do, then it can be the fastest way to get there. And, I think part of what you're describing, one of the other questions I really like to ask people is, how do you find your tribe? Because I think as, you know, either a freelancer or somebody who's doing something really interesting and unique like what you're doing, you have to find those people that you can connect with that, like you described, either have done this before and can sort of, you know, give you a heads up on some of the challenges you're going to face or be there to celebrate successes with you because they really, you know, really get it. And so grad school can be a really easy way to find those people who, you know, just get you and get what you want to do and you have that network forever.
Yeah, and that's a great caveat, though. It's like no one should go to grad school to figure out what they think they want to do. Oh, my God.
Tens of thousands of dollars later and you might not have the answer to that question.
Well, I don't know what to do. I'm just going to go to law school. And I'm like, do anything but that. Do definitely not do that one thing.
So speaking of finding your tribe, so you work out of Design Cloud, which is a co-working space in the West Loop in Chicago. So tell us why you decided to work at a co-working space, a little bit about Design Cloud and, you know, what you love about it.
So we've got this collective going, Creative Partners, and we've got all these partner companies, and some of them don't have a formal office. Some of them, you know, their office is mainly the build shop. Some of them you know, their office in like a suburb. And we decided we wanted a dedicated space for creative partners. And I knew that could not be my living room. So, plus my printer at home totally doesn't work, so that happened. I looked all around town for co-working spaces, and I had sort of the idea, I mean, I'd never worked in one before, I had the idea of what I wanted in mind, and then I had to go find it. I didn't want just, like, a cubicle and a filing cabinet. That was not going to do. I wanted a place that felt like a community, that I knew the people I worked with. Yeah, just really a community. And I looked all around. I found Design Cloud on the DeskTime app, and I came in, and I looked at a bunch of places, and I was like, oh, cool, this is it. Like, there's an office dog.
Yeah.
Space, really reasonably priced, super reasonably priced. All this great stuff. And I was like, great, okay, this is it. And then I got to hire one more staff member, so it was really important to have an office space that wasn't my living room. And so we both have the all-access pass here. We can be here whenever. We have keys. We've got some great summer interns, so they can be here. Yeah, it's really, really great.
That's the thing I think I love about co-working spaces, at least in the phase that we're in now, is there are so many of them,
mm-hmm.
and they're all different, and so you can find the one that fits for you. Because, like you said, you just kind of knew when you'd found your place, which is so important. Mm-hmm. Okay, so my last question for you is, how do you find balance? So you're doing something you love, but there are stresses and you're doing something totally unique. So I'm sure there are days when you're ready to throw up your hands.
Totally.
How do you sort of keep it together and keep yourself balanced?
I have some friends that do not work in the arts, and one of them is a doctor. I realized a couple years ago, someone said, like, there are actually no emergencies in the arts. Like, if this thing goes out a day late, or if you don't return that call, you know, if you don't catch that call, it's not an emergency. It's okay. And I look at my friend who's also named Dana, and she's a doctor. And I'm like, in your job, there are emergencies. Like,
yeah, well, yeah. So perspective. I know. And that's sometimes the hardest thing to achieve when you're doing something unique and doing well. And it's great that you have a team, because sharing, mm-hmm. when one of you doesn't have perspective, hopefully the other one does and can sort of talk you off the ledge.
There's that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your time today. We really, really appreciate it. Oh, tell us really quickly before your battery runs out, where can we find you and Creative Partners online?
Creative Partners has a total placeholder website, www.creativepartnersarts.org. But the three partner companies you should look at are Blair Thomas & Company, blairthomas.org, 8th Blackbird, which is 8thblackbird.org, and Lucky Plush Productions, who are luckyplush.com. And they're all brilliant and wonderful artists.
Awesome. Beautiful. So we do show notes, which will be up on the website for each episode, and we will be sure to include those links in there.
Great.
Thank you so much, and have a great rest of your day.
You are very welcome. You too.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.